Well, it's February 16th, 2001. We're in Norman, Oklahoma, speaking with Aris Hughley. Okay. And I said, since I ran into you or ran across you in such an odd way, I really don't have much background on your life. Have you lived in Oklahoma all of your life?
Yes. Started out in Beaver, out in the Panhandle, the easternmost of the three Panhandle counties. Mm-hmm. And then when I finished high school, moved to Alva to go to school. And after I graduated, I stayed on and worked at the university, like 43 years.
So you lived in Beaver County until you were around 18?
Mm-hmm.
Then you moved to Alva for a lot longer time than I suspect you thought you were
going
to be there for.
Right.
And then making your way slowly south and east.
Moved down here to Norman. My niece lived here, and she invited me to come. And I guess I thought that when you didn't work 8 hours a day, it was hard to find enough to do in Alva. Boy, there's plenty to do in Norman.
Yeah, it's a good town to live in.
And, you know, people will say to me, well, you don't seem to mind driving over to Oklahoma City. And my idea is that when you've lived 2.5 hours from Oklahoma City all your life, it's just wonderful to be 30 minutes away.
We had people, when we went to Boise City, we had people coming in from North Texas, Southern Canada, you know, driving 2 hours, like
yeah.
You say, is just part of the everyday life.
Yeah, if you're going to live there, you get used to it, and it doesn't seem like anything.
Right. We thought that we were really imposing on them, you know, when we found out how far they were driving.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, no, it's not a big deal. Well, when were you born?
1919.
So when you moved to Alva then, it was 37?
36.
36. So you had kind of experienced what most people would say is the worst of the storms already.
Well, yeah. That summer of 1936 was really terrible. It was hot. There weren't as many dust storms, but the heat was just immense, like 120. And it set the record for that area.
Was that in Alva or when you were still in Beaver? Whereabouts in Beaver County were you?
Beaver.
Right in Beaver.
Mm-hmm.
I just found out that's the oldest published newspaper in Oklahoma.
Is that right?
Yeah, and it's still going on.
Yeah.
I forgot what it's called, the Beaver.
Herald Democrat.
And it's the oldest continuously published newspaper in the state.
Good for them.
Yeah, I don't think they knew it. I called them to see if they were still printing, and I don't think they knew they were the oldest.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, I've known the newspaper editors for a long time.
So you were in Beaver then when it was setting heat records, or had you moved to Alva at that point?
Well, I didn't move to Alva until that fall.
Yeah.
But it was that hot in Beaver, too.
Were you involved in a farming family? Or?
No, we never did farm, but my dad was a grain elevator manager. So how the farmers fared made a big difference to us.
You were just as connected as if you had been farming.
Right.
Well, do you remember, did you live in town?
Yes, we always lived in town. But, you know, town was 1,000.
Right, it's a different kind of town.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember when the first presence of something different coming through, and like when you realized, you know, it's we are in a dust bowl or we are in a depression? I mean, do you remember something that kind of told you or happened in your mind that made you aware that things are different now?
It had always been pretty windy. You know, you don't call it wind out there, you call it breeze. But it's always been windy. So it wasn't until the big old clouds billowed in that we could realize that this is more than a breeze.
Yeah. The 35 dust storm?
Well, the 35 was the worst one. That April 35 mm-hmm. was the one where it was clear black for some long time. No, long time. Several. I guess I can't remember how long. But it feels like it was a quarter of a day. And that one was the granddaddy of them all. But the clouds would billow in let's see, what I was saying on this tape was that it was pretty much like a tornado cloud, except that instead of it being a rain cloud, it was full of dust, and it rolled in like a tornado cloud. It came billowing in. It didn't just turn gradually.
Right. Do you think that some people we've spoken with mark that day as, in their mind, the beginning of that period?
No,
people say no, it came
before. The period was before that. That was kind of the crowning glory rather than the beginning.
Right.
So there was a lot after that, but there had been a lot before that.
In your mind, it was that the beginning of the depression for that area as well, or had that later before?
The dust storm. You know, one of my friend's dad was saying, I wouldn't mind having 25-cent wheat if I just had some. And see what that says to you? That the depression was terrible, but the drought and the dust storms were worse.
Right. He wouldn't have minded the low price.
He could have put up with the low price if he just had some to sell.
Yeah.
But, well, that the wind and the dust just would blow the wheat right out of the ground. It'd be sprouted and still blow it right out of the ground.
Did your father, was the elevator, did he run it, or was
He was a manager, but, you know, the manager was the staff, too.
Yeah. How did that affect your life if the farmers were going down? How did that affect the grain elevators?
He worked as a salary, and so pretty much it didn't affect us that much. It's amazing what the money comparison is to what it is now.
Yeah.
Like, I worked my way through college at 15 cents an hour, and my great-nephew goes to school in Dallas and is a computer whiz kid. He gets $40 an hour. I don't even tell him my story because his mind won't conceive that.
Yeah. Was the grain elevator manager, was that a fairly... I'm not familiar with how that was in pay scale. Was that a good job to have? I mean, that was a pretty...
Any job was a good job to have. But, yeah it was medium, I believe I'd say. Not really good, but not just subsistence either.
Right, yeah. How was the... Did you have any brothers or sisters?
A brother and a sister, both younger.
So you were the oldest?
Mm-hmm.
Were they a lot younger than you?
No, my brother is... 3 years younger, and my sister 4.5 years younger.
So you were still the head of the children, but not by much.
Well, right, we were little at the same time. All preschoolers at once.
Right. Well, was the town of Beaver, would you say that you were on the, were you on the upper end of the, of society, or middle, or?
No.
Were a lot of your friends affected more than you by the dust and drought?
My best friend was. Her dad's the one that could have put up with the price if he'd had some. But some of the others they lived out on the farm in the southeast part of the county. And people who lived in town, well, see, some of those farmers had been prosperous farmers before the dust storm days.
Mm-hmm.
So I keep trying to think how they fared. I can't recall an illustration of that.
Did any of your friends or acquaintances move away?
No. I talk about that on the tape, too. But when they wanted us to move away, that mostly nobody wanted to. They were, as I put it, fiercely independent. And boy, we just stick it out. This has been good, and it'll be good again. So we're not going to move away.
Do you think, the people that left the Dust Bowl and headed for different areas of the country, that Beaver County was not a good example of that?
No. I think that it didn't have very many tenant farmers. It had been settled up with claims, and people owned the land, and it was their only asset. So they weren't going to go off and leave it.
Right.
It wasn't like that they were a tenant that lost their job and had to go somewhere.
Right. You think it was mainly tenant farmers then that were comprising
it feels like that, that tenant farmers and, yeah.
Huh. And it's interesting.
Well, owning the land was kind of like a sacred trust. It was really important. So you didn't give up on your land.
At that time, you would have had land for almost 50 years in your family.
Yeah, my grandparents lived in Beaver County, too, over in the southeast corner. And boy, some of the devastation of the dust storms I can remember at their place. That thistles, you know, tumbleweeds,
right,
would go into the fence row, and then that would catch the dust. And by the end of the dust storm era, there was no fence. It was all buried. Hmm. And they had also a row of hedge apples about a quarter of a mile long. And that worked the same way. It caught the dirt. And, of course, the trees died with the drought. But it wasn't rich dirt like the deltas, you know. It was pure D sand.
Right.
But let's see, if you've been to Beaver, there, you know, there's a sand dunes on the north side of the river.
Right.
Every place is pretty sandy in that whole county. So, yeah, the sand moved pretty easy when the wind blew.
Got a great picture of in a little kind of gully, railroad tracks covered up with sand, and then they had to haul in a big crane, big like earth shovel, to scoop out the sand.
Right.
It moved so fast. Your grandparents must have had a hard time making it through, being a little older, and I mean, out in a pure farming area.
Well, let's see. My granddad died pretty early. He died before the Depression started, the dust storms. And my grandmother, well, let's see, she pretty early on moved into town and lived next door to us.
Well, living in town during that period and growing up there, what could you describe a typical day, what you'd go through? You know, was did you have chores or what? What your tasks were around the house?
Let's see. We had two Jersey cows. There was a vacant lot next to us, and that, you know, they didn't have zoning.
Right.
So we had cows, but I never did learn to milk. I guess the bad truth is that my dad was a chronic alcoholic, and that was the days when they didn't do anything for him. Boy, they just, you just survived.
Yeah.
So I'd always think that, well, if he had to come home to milk the cows, he'd get home. He wouldn't be out getting drunk.
Right.
But, you know, that was just one of my childhood fancies. So had a hang-up with learning to milk the cows.
So you didn't learn to milk the cows almost on purpose.
Yeah, on purpose.
So your dad
so that he'd
to
have to come home. But when he didn't come home, Mother milked the cows, because that was our one of our main sources of income. Was it? We sold the milk.
Hmm. Did you have any chores around the house that were yours that you had, like, oh, here's, you know, things that you had to get done during the day?
Boy, my memory's not that good. I don't believe I can recall that.
Do you remember any changes in household duties once the dirt picked up? I mean, a lot more cleaning or...
Oh, yeah. Boy, let's see, until I was in a senior in high school, we lived in just a four-room house. And it was pretty poorly insulated.
So. One story, mm-hmm. Four rooms.
Yeah, like pretty near a shotgun. Two rooms at the front and two rooms built on at the back.
Yeah.
And, boy, the dirt just filtered in there like you would never believe. And we didn't have water in or water out. You had to bring it in a bucket from a faucet out in the yard.
Heat it up if you wanted to have hot water?
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine trying to keep things clean in that
environment. You couldn't. And a lot of people wore dust masks. Has anybody talked to you about that? That if you had the money, you bought some you know, special fabrics, but mainly it just covered your nose and mouth, and then had strings that you tied up on the back, and so you slept with a dust mask.
I've never heard anyone saying they. I heard some people say you'd cover your mouth when you were doing sweeping and stuff, but
yeah,
but you'd actually just put them on when you were sleeping.
Yeah.
And I've heard some stories of ceilings caving in and all kinds of bizarre events.
Yeah, I guess I don't remember the ceilings caving in, but boy, keeping ahead of the dust was a full-time job.
Doing house cleaning with a shovel.
My description is that you had to clean the oven before you could bake your biscuits. Talked to them about that in this other tape.
Were you in charge of doing laundry, or did your mother take care of that?
Well,
or ironing, or
yeah, I ironed, but she mostly did the laundry. Maybe we couldn't do it to suit her,
but she let you do the ironing.
Yeah.
And what was your? Did you have a? Did you heat the iron on the stove, or
mm-hmm. how? Flat irons that they call them.
Did you ever use gasoline irons?
No. My aunt did, but we didn't.
I've seen those before, and they always look like they're just getting ready to explode.
Well,
I don't know.
I don't know whether they were that dangerous or not. She didn't think they were. She got along with it.
Yeah.
All right. And she wasn't afraid of it.
Yeah. I think I'd stick to the flat irons if I was. Maybe not. I don't know.
They cooled off really quick. And see, you could keep going. You didn't have to wait for your iron to heat again.
Right.
So you got through with your work a lot sooner when you used a gasoline iron than when you used flat irons. But you always had three flat irons, so two were getting hot while one was being used and getting cold.
You just clip on to the hot one with your handle?
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't have water in or out.
Right.
And I'm guessing no electricity.
We did, strangely enough, had electricity. But I can't imagine how we had that when we didn't have water in and out.
Do you remember getting electricity, or did you always have it?
No, I don't remember ever not having it.
Huh. What about running water? Do you remember when you first encountered?
Well, we didn't. We moved to a different house, clear across town, and had running water in that little house where we lived the whole time. We didn't ever have water in or water out.
So when you moved to a different house in town, you had running water at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You remember thinking the first time that you
it felt pretty deluxe.
I can't imagine having to we take it for granted so much now.
Yeah.
Just being able to brush your teeth and wash
mm-hmm.
your face and clean up.
Let the faucet run while you brush your teeth.
Yeah, and don't think a thing about it. Must have been quite a change.
Well, it was, made you feel like the better days were coming.
Well, what about things you would do for entertainment or fun during the time in Beaver?
Had several really good friends, and we'd hang out together, but we didn't go to the movies much. Didn't have the money. The movie was a dime, but you didn't have a dime.
Right. It didn't matter how cheap it was if you didn't have that
right.
much money. So on a lazy Saturday afternoon, what would you do to entertain yourselves?
Well, play games? I must have done something, but I don't remember it, so apparently it was something pretty mundane. I'm not very good at remembering details.
What about dances?
Well, let's see. American Legion always had a dance. They had a dance every week. But we weren't allowed to go.
You couldn't go?
I couldn't go.
For any particular reason, or?
Well, no.
Just Mom wouldn't let it? Wouldn't let it, or your Dad, who was the one that wouldn't let you go?
Well, Dad thought it was no place for a reputable person to be.
All right.
He'd be there.
Oh.
he was a Legion member, and so he supposedly was helping put on the dance.
Well, he might know then. He might know if it truly was a place you didn't need to be.
Well, yeah. See, it was Prohibition days, and liquor flowed plenty free. And you see, that put him in a position to imbibe without being observed by family members.
Oh, I see. I didn't think about it being Prohibition.
Yeah.
How did your dad go about getting his alcohol?
Bootleggers.
Do you remember? I mean, did he keep that fairly hidden from the family, or?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It wasn't something he was proud of at all.
Right.
Let's see. His sister described it as that. When he smelled the cork, he was gone. When he once smelled it, he couldn't quit till he was drunk.
Right. So it was fairly easy to obtain the liquor in that place, at least. And, yeah, I didn't think about that. When you mentioned that earlier, I didn't put two and two together about the bootleggers and whatnot. Sometimes people out on the panhandle tell stories of running into gypsies.
Oh, really?
Moving around. Did you ever encounter any of those?
Hobos, you know, people that were down and out would come to the door a lot. And we must have had a mark because Mother wouldn't turn them away.
Right.
But you see, she always had milk, and that helped a lot.
Mm-hmm.
If she couldn't give them anything else, she could give them a glass of milk.
You know what hobo marks look like?
No, I just hear about them.
I hear a lot about them.
Do you?
Yeah, and I don't know what they look. I wish I could find what they look like.
Well, I guess I had always thought that it was kind of a word-of-mouth thing that traveled as fast as your two ladies rescheduling the thing.
Right.
I guess I didn't really conceive that it was something that was a literal mark.
I've heard that they would often, like, mark a telephone pole or a tree or something by a house that was either good or bad or, you know, that they would have a... some kind of weird little sign or something.
Well,
so
I hadn't thought about that. I guess I just was so sure that it was a word of mouth thing that I discounted it.
Did you live by a railroad yard or by a major highway?
No. There wasn't much of either one. See, the main railroad went by Forgan, a little town 7 miles north of Beaver. So, the railroad that came on down there was just to pick up the grain in harvest season.
But they
didn't have a regular rail service there.
You remember how you said your mother never turned them away and never refused to give them something.
Mm-hmm.
Did they ever have to? Did she make them do work or chores? Or?
Well, I remember their offering. I don't remember that she necessarily always had a job for him to do.
Were you afraid of them?
No. They just seemed like people like us. That we'd been a little luckier than they.
Yeah. Well, what about holiday memories? Do you have any, like, what all would you do for Christmas? Or?
Well, we went to the grandparents a lot. And then two of my dad's brothers lived, one about 6 or 8 miles from the grandparents, and the other one just about a mile and a half from them. So that's what we'd do on Sundays a lot, was to go to one of those three farm homes. And we always had a car.
Yeah? Do you remember growing up with a car then?
Mm-hmm. You didn't need a driver's license. You just drove when you were big enough to do it.
When you could reach the pedals.
Yeah.
Well, do you remember, like, your Christmas changing at all as the times worsened, you know, as things got a little tight, maybe? Or, you know, do you remember a change in the way you would celebrate or a change in the way dinner was made?
Well... I guess I hadn't thought on it enough to have an opinion about it. There was always a Christmas program at the church, and Dad was always the one that dressed up in the Santa Claus suit, and he could he enjoyed getting dressed up and then going to around to shut-ins and people that weren't going to be at the church, and then ended up at the church at about the right time to do his ho-ho-ho stunt.
What a great job.
But anyway, that was kind of fun. That first I realized that who Santa Claus was that I recognized my dad's hands, because they were pretty unique.
Yeah, what was unique about your dad, your dad's hands?
Well, just the shape and the form, and, well, they weren't gnarled like mine, but anyway, his hands were, you'd know them anywhere.
Yeah. And you look down, you're looking at Santa Claus, and you look down,
and here, it's Dad's hands. But I don't remember feeling upset about it. Yeah. Maybe part of it still was because I could realize that he enjoyed what he was doing that much. I don't know.
What a great thing to have Santa Claus for a dad.
Yeah.
Well, then you moved away to Alva when you were
17.
Mm-hmm. How was that for you?
Well, you know, that seemed like a big city, and it was 7,000, but that was seven times bigger than Beaver.
Right.
So, it didn't take too long, though, for Alva to feel comfortable.
Yeah.
My friend that I mentioned, the one whose dad could put up with the price, went with me. I had the promise of an NYA job when I went over to school, but she went without a promise of any job. So the first year that we were in college, she cleaned houses to earn her way at 15 cents an hour.
Yeah. What was your job? What was your NYA job?
Well, worked at one of the agricultural offices down at the city hall for that first year. And then, let's see, I guess it was the next year I worked for the professor that was the director of the NYA, you know, doing timesheets and all that sort of thing.
Right.
And then the third year I worked at the registry business office at the school. I was assigned there, and then that's where I worked after I got out of college.
So you just stayed on?
Yeah.
So you were able to pay for your schooling and room and board with the NYA job?
Yeah, $15 a month paid everything.
Well, that's not bad. But your friend just came with you hoping that she would find a job, or?
Well, she just had more faith than I did. I guess I would. I think maybe that I can't account for it. But yeah, she was more. She had gone to school down in Texas or someplace close by her home, and then had been out of school a year or two before she came up to Beaver to school.
You mentioned the NYA job, which was a New Deal program.
Right.
And how was, you were old enough probably at that time in Beaver and Alva to perceive the New Deal and how it was accepted in that area or rejected?
Well, Dad was such a hot-headed Democrat that he wouldn't think that FDR could do any wrong. And pretty much what he thought was what we heard. So that maybe colored what we thought. But I thought it was well accepted, because we were all up against it. And at least FDR tried to do something before. There was no effort to help you. You were just, it's just sad that you were in a predicament.
Right.
But there's nothing I can do to help your predicament.
Yeah. So he came across as being a good guy to obviously your dad.
Well,
and to you as well.
Yeah. I sometimes think maybe, you know, Dad would have supported anybody that was a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, boy, you sat there by the radio and listened to FDR, you could think that he's got some ideas that they're going to work. you know, when you're tied to agriculture, and see, we were, there was nothing else. The oil play out there that they have now wasn't. It was agriculture or nothing. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, when they came up with wanting to slaughter the cows and the cattle because there was an oversupply,
right. That
didn't sound very, that sounded illogical. We didn't know enough about supply and demand that we could realize what the relationship really, really was.
Right. Seems like Roosevelt, most people I've spoken with, they either thought like your dad did, or they thought he was the devil. You know,
yeah.
There's no middle ground there.
Right.
Now, I ran into, you know, both sides. It's an odd scene.
Well, I'm sure those that couldn't see supply and demand and had to plow up their plants before that, they couldn't even grow any. And then when they grew some, they had to plow them up.
Right.
See, that just sounded like utter futility. So I could see how there'd be people that, well, but see, the worst of the drought was kind of beginning to be over by the time they were ready to do that part of it. To me, the drought and the dust storms, were earlier than that. Let's see, 1933, that Roosevelt was inaugurated, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that. Yeah, 1933. That's not quite right, because, boy, those dust storms still went on for two or three more years.
He came in March of 33, and then, 34, 35, 36, the big
mm-hmm.
heat wave. I mean, he was...
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've never heard spoken to anyone that remembered his fireside chats.
Oh, really?
Yeah. What did you think about those? I mean, you talked a little bit just...
I'm surprised, because I don't think that was just a matter of being brainwashed and thinking that I'd believe like my dad did. But I thought his method of presentation was good, that he made you feel like that your problems were his concern and that you weren't just a grain of sand. You were a real person that needed somebody to open the door and let you out of that situation. So I thought his tone of voice and his whole presentation, besides the words he said, were reassuring. And man, you needed some reassurance.
Yeah. You think, this is an odd question, but I'm thinking of it, so I'll ask it. Do you think that there's ever been a president since him that made you feel that way? Do you think there's been others that have been...
Not to the extent that he did. I think there have been some that made, well, that felt like they're a person like you. They're not somebody high and mighty that you can't aspire to even speak to.
The only one I could think of in my lifetime that I like remember being like that would be Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, I thought he did. And Harry Truman wasn't bad, but you probably can't remember Harry Truman.
Not by a few years.
Yeah.
So you were the fireside chats, they were regularly scheduled?
No, I don't think it's like every Tuesday or something like that. It was any time when he was ready to promote a new program. Mm-hmm. Well, he'd do his own advertising in a fireside chat. And so, yeah, you knew when
it
was
coming up. Be advertised a little bit, and you would mm-hmm. be able to prepare for it. Would you say the radio was a focal point for you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I know there's a lot of programs.
About your only connection to the outside world.
And what would you listen? Did you have favorite things to listen to, or favorite news programs like Good Morning America or the 5 o'clock news? Were those?
Don't know that they had Edward R. Murrow was about that time.
Yeah.
And he it paid you to listen to what he had to say. But I believe we used it more for entertainment, comedy things than we did for keeping up with the news.
What are some good comedy things you remember?
Probably just pretty much a cocoon that we didn't realize there was a world out there. It was just what our immediate problems were right there at home.
It's still kind of like that out there. You know, you get out in the panhandle, and it's, you have a little town that's surrounded by...
just kind of self-contained.
Right.
Is what it is. And, you know, that's not negative.
That's just the fact of life.
Yeah, that's just the way it is.
My dad always used to listen to Amos and Andy, I guess.
I was trying to think what...
because he's always talking about Amos and Andy stuff.
Yeah.
Doing their voices. I don't know what he's talking about.
I guess I can't... I don't believe I can tell you the names of them, but I can...
Do you remember sitting in front of the radio listening to it, though?
Our radio was pretty close to the pot-bellied stove, and you could stay warm and listen at the same time.
Is that your... was that your source of heat for the four-room house?
Mm-hmm.
You had a big cast-iron pot-bellied stove.
Uh-huh.
You'd have to stock it up with...
Coal. Are you kidding? There are not enough trees that you could burn them.
I realized my mistake.
No. I just thought...
So how... you would stock that up with coal, and would it last the night, whole night through? Or would you have to get up in the
middle? Oh, no, you got up in the middle. You got up in the morning and built the fire. and it didn't last all night.
Did it heat the whole house?
No. It heated one room.
In the wintertime, would you all be in that one room, or would you go out and sleep under blankets in different rooms?
We went out and slept in other rooms. But you didn't have heat.
No. But I guess in the one room it got fairly warm.
It burned one side and freeze the other side. It didn't keep you very cozy.
Right. What about when you moved to the other house? Did it have a better...
Well, it had a floor furnace in the big main living room part. And then, let's see. Boy, there wasn't any heat back there in the other rooms.
Same thing then.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you moved to Alva to go to school, what was your... did you live in the dorms at school or in the...
They didn't have dorms then. So we lived at a basement of a home that rented the room to us.
You remember how much you paid for that?
Well, I imagine... I can't remember that one. I can remember a later one that we paid $5 a month apiece.
So $10 for two of you to live.
Uh-huh.
And would the... would you be responsible for your own food and different things in there?
You called it a light housekeeping room.
What did that entail?
Oh, that you had a little hot plate. And most of the time you'd have an oven, but it was just, well, what you'd call batching.
Right. Well, when you went to Alva, did you go there with something in mind to study or just...
Oh, I changed my mind two or three times, but what I thought I wanted to do was to be a home demonstration agent.
Yeah.
Because to me that... that opened doors of opportunity, and I guess that's always been really important to me. That, you know, you have to have a chance,
mm-hmm.
and then if you have a chance, hope that you are smart enough to recognize it and take hold of it.
The home demonstration agents would come through. Were they connected to the county?
Yeah.
They would come through and just describe for a group of women different ways to do can or sew or...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Kind of like a traveling home ec teacher, is that right?
Well, they didn't travel so much as they established clubs and would go out and visit with your whole club. When your club had the meeting, why the agent came out and put on a demonstration.
Were you a member of a club in Beaver?
Mm-mm. I never was a member of the club. I saw it from the outside instead of the inside.
So you didn't go to any of these home demonstration meetings?
No.
But when you came to there, you thought that would be a good thing to do.
Well, it just seemed to me like that was a leader for something progressive.
Yeah. Who went to these meetings?
Housewives. See, hardly anybody worked outside the home then.
Yeah. Was it more rural than in a city? So that...
Well, see, we weren't city. We were rural.
Yeah.
So it probably wasn't as important in urban areas.
Some people would probably say you were city.
Well,
some farmers way out there in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So then, did you become a home demonstration agent?
Mm-mm. I majored in home economics, but I didn't ever use it. I used business instead.
So you went from one to and ended up in... Did you ever finish school?
Yeah.
With a business degree?
With a home ec degree and a business minor, and then the business is what I did all the whole time.
Do you remember when you moved to Alva, thinking of how was it? It was a bigger city, but what had the drought and the depression not affected it as much? Or do you remember thinking?
Well, I think everybody that went to school when we did came from the same mold. And then I was talking with some of my friends at an alumna affair, and they were the ones calling that to my attention, to saying that they thought that the reason we learned to support each other was that we all came from the same basic background, that we didn't have anybody that was elite.
Right.
We were all populace.
And
so I think that's pretty much the way it really was. There wasn't anybody that was head and shoulders above the rest of us.
Right. Well, what about, what was your school day like in Alva? I mean, would you...
Well, classes in the forenoon and work in the afternoon.
Work in your WPA job?
Yeah, NYA.
Did you have NYA?
Mm-hmm.
Did you have time for college event, like activities, or would you have dances?
Yeah, we did that in the evening.
What all would happen? What all would you do? Or was there for entertainment or diversion there?
Well, mostly like group things, you know. Meetings with your friends, like let's see, I like to belong to the International Relations Club, and I like the professor that sponsored it, and went out for college debate, and thought that was amazing that I could learn to do that, and we had intramural athletics, and we had YWCA, and you know, there was a lot of activities going on.
What athletics did you play?
Basketball, but I never was good at it. Just met the specification of being tall.
Right, so they put you out there. Well, do you remember thinking, or any event, or something that happened in your mind that kind of signaled to you that things were getting better, perhaps that... Were you able to afford something, or did something happen in town or school that brought to your mind, like, oh, things are picking up again? You know, when do you remember?
Boy, I don't remember that. It seemed to me like it was close to the skin the whole time, that it didn't pick up actually until after World War II.
Yeah. That would have been in 1941.
Well, until after, see, 1941's when the war began, and everybody was structured down at that time, you know, with the rationing and things like that. I'm talking like 1946, like 10 years later.
So you're saying that you don't really recall what you would call prosperous times or good times coming until 1946.
Right.
So you went from bare bones beaver.
I'd been away from the beaver 10 years, and before I could realize that there was anything other than
scraping
tomorrow. You don't see day after tomorrow, you just see tomorrow.
When do you remember realizing that there was a day after tomorrow?
Well, I think that's probably a little too strong, but what I guess I'm saying is that if you had food today, you didn't worry about tomorrow.
Right. Just one day at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So when did it become better for you? After the war?
Well, that meant probably too strong. But see, it was up to me to earn all of my own way. Mm-hmm. And that probably isn't what the whole society was doing. I think whole society was getting fairly along better than that. But I was still glad to have an NYA job.
Yeah. When did that end? When you ended school?
Yeah. I don't think the program ended then, but I don't know when the program ended.
At the time that you got out of school, you went right into basically doing the same job.
Yeah.
But your pay went up a tad, or...
Well, let's see. Yeah, I started working at $70 a month, working full-time, $70 a month.
In that time period, did you... I'm just assuming you were married.
No, single.
Always single?
Mm-hmm.
You never met the...
Never... Anybody I liked didn't like me.
Wow, you are different. You don't fit the mold.
Well, maybe not.
So you lived in Alva for 43 years after that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember anything? I mean, you must have seen the city change drastically.
Well, and the school changed drastically, too. See, I was the finance officer. This is what we call the title, which is now the vice president for business affairs.
Oh, it got a little more fancy, didn't it?
Yeah.
So, when you saw the sea, 43 years, and you were... What year did you leave Alva?
83.
So you really saw some changes in that town.
Mm-hmm.
Is there one thing you can think of in particular? I mean, what can you describe a little bit the difference between being there as a bare bones college student or just out of college and then post-war prosperity? I mean, can you talk a little bit about the difference?
Well, let's see.
You noticed?
I hadn't really thought on that before.
Was there any difference for you? And was your life different after the war when things loosened up a little bit and you could...
Well, yeah. You know, you take a bunch of sorority girls and go to a national convention in Detroit, and you wouldn't have thought about doing that at an earlier time. So I'm sure there was some differences. It's just it takes you a little while to think back over them.
Yeah.
But I guess I'm crazy in that regard, too, that it doesn't... how much money I have doesn't appeal to me. That isn't the most important thing. That I enjoy knowing a lot of people better than I enjoy spending a lot of money.
Right. So you were busy in Alva, I take it.
Yeah.
With different groups and different things and so mm-hmm. on. Why did you stay there?
Well, a sense of accomplishment, I think. I think we did some things that made a difference to people.
Did your parents always stay in Beaver?
Yes. My mom moved over to Alva over the last 2 or 3 years.
And your dad lived in Beaver the rest of his whole life there.
Yeah, he ended up in suicide.
Have you ever read a book called Life on the Dry Line?
No. Maybe, what is it? It sounds like it'd be about hard times.
I think you would either enjoy that book or not enjoy that book. But it is...
Is it a pretty new book? Or?
No, it came out in, I'm going to say 91.
Oh, okay.
92. But it sounds a lot like what you're telling me.
Well.
This guy wrote that book, and I was so moved by that book that I called him up. He lived in Oregon.
Well.
And he grew up the 115th Meridian you know, the north-south.
Yeah.
It's what they call the dry line, where beyond that point, they consider it arid or desert-like environment. And to the east of that is semi-arid.
I see.
And that went right basically through the panhandle of Oklahoma, down right about Beaver County. And he lived in Kansas. And he lived, his house, his town was on that dry line. And his dad ran a service station. He was also a bad alcoholic. And he just talks about growing up in the little tiny town on the dry line in that environment.
Well, and I'll say, I'll look for it.
I'll see if I can round up a copy for you. I think you'd really like that.
I think I would.
And when I read that book, and it's all true, it's all just his life, I got out, on the back of the book it said, the author now lives in Portland, Oregon. I got out the phone book at the campus, I started looking, I called him up.
All right.
And I was like, I can't
believe. I bet
he
fell in.
He was, you know, he was, oh, I can't believe you read my book and liked it.
Well,
yeah. Anyway, I think you'd really like it.
All right, I'll look for it.
Well, as a kind of a closing question, sometimes we talk about, like, strong memories. You know, like, if you can think back to the Depression or the 30s as a time period, are there certain memories or events that stand out in your mind as symbolic of that era? Or, you know, when you say Depression, like, what's the first thing you think of, kind of, you know?
Well, the people that lived next door to us, he didn't have a job, and they got really hungry, and all we had to share with them was milk. Boy, they were up against it.
What, you gave them what you could?
We gave them what we had, which wasn't very much. But I don't even remember what happened to them. But that one winter, boy, they were really hard up.
What would they do?
Do without, till they were all near starvation.
Would the town collect things for people like that?
They didn't have it either. You just can't imagine how what it's like when you're tied to agriculture and there's no agriculture. They didn't have it. They couldn't give it to them. We were lucky that we could give them milk.
And you don't know if they moved away or...
I wish I could think what happened to them, but I don't.
That's a pretty profound memory.
Yeah. Makes you know if you've got some, you better share it.
What was a typical meal like for you?
Well, we ate a lot of fried potatoes.
Yeah.
My brother, still, that was still his favorite thing. You know, so many times what we're reared on, you don't want any more of it.
Right, you're tired of it.
Yeah.
He still likes it, huh?
Yeah. You know, well, other people will talk about dry beans. We didn't have dry beans very much, but boy, we had potatoes a lot.
Was that, you would have a garden that you grew those in, or did you buy them?
We didn't do very well with garden. I don't know what the matter of it was. Maybe some of it was that water business, you know. You can't grow a garden there without water.
Right.
And we finally fixed up a makeshift shower head out in the garage, and then the drain made a little hole in the wall of the garage just so that it could drain on out into the garden. And that's the best garden I can ever remember our having. So we didn't do very well with garden. Dad wasn't there.
Yeah.
Gardening was the last thing he's going to be interested to do.
So you ate a lot of potatoes.
Yeah.
Was meat a fairly common thing on your table?
Beef. We'd buy a quarter of a beef at a time, and it'd have to last you about all winter. But, yeah. And I still like beef better than I do pork or chicken or any other thing.
How odd that you didn't get tired of... What do you think about fried potatoes now?
Well, I don't have them very often. But maybe it's just because I think that they're not quite as wholesome as baked potatoes.
Yeah.
I'd rather have a baked potato than a fried potato.
You still stay in contact with people from Alva, I mean, that you met as a young girl in Alva or Beaver.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You have, you're still in contact with friends that you had in Beaver.
Yeah. I was thinking that I ought to tell you who to go see. One of my classmates lives in Tulsa, and I think he'd be a good one to talk to you about the dust storm days.
Well, I'm going to send you a release form that allows us to use your tape at the library, that allows people to listen to your tape. Because without the release form, people can't listen to it.
I don't object to that.
Maybe you can, when I send that to you, maybe you can write down some information, some people that we would be interested in speaking with.
Okay. Well, I was trying to think if the my friend with the 25-cent wheat lives out at Dalhart, Texas. You know, when you were saying that,
right?
Yeah, in Guymon, you're not very far from Dalhart. And I sent her the same clipping that I got out of the Norman paper and told her that I wished that she'd write to you and tell you that she'd like to talk to you about dust storm days. But I guess I didn't, her health's not as good as mine. And I didn't much think she'd do it, but I sure wanted her to.
Does she live in a nursing home there?
No, I think she lives with her son.
I wonder if she would know more people in Dalhart that would be, that had lived in Oklahoma.
Well, we could ask her. She lived in Canyon until she needed to go live closer to her son.
Right.
But
we're
going to
be in Guymon for about 3-4 days.
Oh, are you?
Guymon, Goodwell, Hooker, that area.
Well,
I know we could go down to Dalhart.
Yeah. Let me tell you her address, and I might even have her phone number.
We were go up to Liberal, Kansas, too.
Yeah.
We go. But really, the study is, we are trying to study or focus on women who lived in Oklahoma.
Well, she lived in Oklahoma during that time. And then after the war, they lived in Texas, but always in the panhandle of Texas.
Well, I'm going to send you the release form, and then you can write down.
Okay.
You can gather up things and write down information that way.
When is it you're going to Guymon?
I think.
Like PDQ or?
Oh, no. Well, sort of PDQ. I think it might be in April. I think maybe the second. We're going to be the second Thursday of April, but probably like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Okay.
We have to give a little talk at the museum in Goodwill.
I think her son could find somebody to bring her up there to talk with you.
Well, okay, that'd be great. I mean,
well, at least I'd like to tell her that suggest that to her to see if she thinks.
When we do places like that, we usually try and get the people together in groups of 3 or 4.
Oh, I bet she'd like that better too.
A lot of women do like that better, because their friends can be with them and.
Well, what someone else says generates some thoughts of your own,
right.
Either pro or con.
Things like that in this conversation, you didn't think to talk about, and I forgot to ask about, could have been brought up by other people.
Right.
You know, we got completely off the topic of things that you remembered strongly about.
I'm not going to be able to come up with much.
That family next door story is pretty perfect, pretty strong memory.
To see people really destitute and really hungry right next door is pretty unnerving.
What else is on your note list? You were talking about the difference between the WPA and the PWA.
Yeah. Well, let's see.
Then we have the NYA.
Oh, dust pneumonia is one of the things one of my friends had dust pneumonia, and boy, she buckled under really quick. And considering how much exposure there was to it, it's amazing that there wasn't more of it. But they didn't have antibiotics, so boy, if you got pneumonia, you were in bad shape.
Did anyone in your family?
No, I guess we're just a healthy bunch. We all. When we were kids, I guess we had kids' things, but we all grew up pretty healthy.
Your friend that had it, did she pass away?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when she was in the eighth grade. I guess that maybe I was a year ahead of her, but she was an eighth grader when she got dust pneumonia and died. There was quite a bit of dust pneumonia, but boy, of course they worked at it, trying to keep it from going into pneumonia. Let's see, out at Beaver, they had just built a new hospital before the crash. Like 1929 is when the hospital opened.
Okay.
And these two doctors came. They had done their intern work up at Halsted Hospital in Kansas and came down there to this new hospital. And, of course, they were anxious to keep up a good reputation.
Mm-hmm.
And they did us all a good job. One of my uncles moved over to Veneta when he retired. And when he got sick, the doctor wanted him to go into Tulsa to see a specialist. And independent custody is, said, I'm going back out to Beaver. Dr. Ben and his butcher knife can do me more good than those specialists can. So that's...
They must have been good.
Well, in his eyes, they couldn't be beat. But I just thought, wow, that's...
That's some kind of loyalty.
That's how fiercely independent they could be.
Well, so you had a hospital right there in Beaver.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
pretty
lucky.
Still do. You know. And that's amazing that it can survive.
A lot of people talk about having to drive for an hour to get to a doctor.
Yeah.
You know.
Uh-huh.
Did you say Beaver, it seems like a fairly progressive town.
Yeah, I think it is. You know, it's never going to be a bigger town than it is, but it... I think that it has some good local leadership.
Yeah. Well, what about childhood illnesses? Do you remember?
I can't remember being sick very much. I'd get tonsillitis really easy.
Yeah.
And that's all I can remember. And I'd get bruises on my heel, get foot bruises pretty easy. But I can't remember ever having bad colds other than tonsillitis.
Do you remember any medicines you had to take or things you would do to stop from being sick?
No.
Any remedies?
Oh, my mom had a lot of home remedies. Yeah. She thought a bread and milk poultice was going to do everything.
And milk poultice.
Mm-hmm. And it just kept it moist.
Mm-hmm.
And so then your natural immune system could have a chance to work because it kept an infection moist.
So you'd mix the bread and the milk up into like a paste almost?
Uh-huh.
Then you would put it on your body? And
well, on an infection.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than not pneumonia.
Right.
Like, an infected heel.
Kind of wrap it up?
Yeah.
And let it sit there.
Just make a big sock and hold it on there. And it worked because it kept it moist. And it was, she put the poultice on hot.
Yeah.
Warmer than your skin.
Right.
Not hot, hot.
I never heard of that mixture before being put on.
And let's see, what they did when you got a cold in your chest was, lard, coal oil, and turpentine. A third of each one. And that's what you rubbed on your chest. Or you didn't go out and buy some medicine because you didn't have any money to buy it.
Sounds like you just go to the cupboard, cook something up.
Right.
I talked to a lady whose mom would go out under the house, under the barn, shoot a skunk, render that skunk lard down, make skunk oil.
Boy.
Skunk oil poultice. Or not poultice. She said they would... At night, they would smear skunk grease on the bottom of their feet.
Oh, really?
And they would sleep with that on their feet throughout the night.
So apparently encouraged circulation or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know.
That sounds pretty gross to me.
She said they didn't have any friends for the longest time.
That'd be for apparent reasons, wouldn't it?
She said that when mom got the skunk fat out, that they wouldn't
be had well,
I'd be afraid it smelled like skunk.
It did.
Wow. That'd
be pretty
awful.
So you should be lucky with your bread and milk.
Yeah, bread and milk didn't stink. Or at least it didn't until the milk soured.
Right. Well, so you sound like you had pretty typical concoctions to deal with things.
Yeah.
But you didn't really need them if you didn't get sick.
Well, and when worse came to worse, well, you went over to the hospital.
Yeah.
And they did you a good job.
You weren't afraid to go to the hospital?
Oh, no. Not really. They didn't come off as booger man.
Right. A lot of times, as even up to an older child, they do. Doctors sometimes have a bad
connotation.
Right. I used to get tonsillitis. My doctor would give me a big old penicillin shot that hurt so bad. But for a long time, I'd always think, if I'm going to the hospital or doctor, it's going to hurt.
Going to be a shot, and you hated them.
Yep.
I still hate shots myself.
Well, anything else that you would like to wrap up with?
Well, I don't think so.
I
think we've covered all the bases that I had in mind.
Okay, good. If you can think of it, something else, some story, even if it's a small story.
Okay, I'll think on it some more. I guess I keep my presence crowded. I don't have room enough to think about what it used to be.
Yeah, well, I guess that's good or bad. I don't know. Just indifferent. But it's probably better that you keep your mind focused on what's going on around you today than dwelling in the past. But if you remember something, a lot of people give us a call. We can call them right back. We can call you right back on our nickel.
Oh, okay.
And talk to you, or I'm here enough that I can drop by again.
I'll think on it a little bit.
Even the smallest thing sometimes.
My sister's better than I at recalling things, details of long ago. I'll have to ask her if she can think of some family stories.
Okay.